the future does not exist.
Hello. Hello. Hello, dear earlobes. Two of us are back again. This is The Future Does Not Exist, a podcast about memory, spaces, remembrances, and whatever the hell else we feel like talking about at any given time. This is me, Damien Leslie, and across from me is...
Marcel van Schoten.
And yeah, today is Whit Sunday.
Yeah.
Or Pink... is tomorrow Pinkster?
No, it's... we have first day of Pinkster and second day of Pinkster.
Oh, the day of Pinkster.
Yeah.
Okay, where's I'm intrigued about
this. Most people probably remember it because it's Pink Pop.
Yes, so Pink Pop used to always be on this weekend.
Yeah, which is sort of, given because it's called Pink Pop.
Yes. Well, a lot of people outside of Holland may not understand the origin of Pink Pop.
No,
especially now that Pink Pop doesn't happen on Pinkster weekend anymore.
No, and that's all because of money.
Yes, I imagine it was more bands saying, you're a little too early for our summer jaunt.
Yeah.
let's move you closer to the rest of the festivals in the summer, please.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. I think there's a couple festivals in a couple of weeks, and they decided like match up with them so we can get more deals.
Yes. And for those who aren't aware, Pinkster is Pentecost, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is the religious holiday for the Abrahamic faiths where Peter and the apostles and apparently about 120 other people from different parts of the world all gathered together and were visited by the Holy Spirit, or the Holy Spirit descended upon them. And that Holy Spirit has been described in various sources as being gusts of wind, mm-hmm, and tongues of fire, which is a bit I'm a bit more interested in.
Sounds like a typical summer Dutch day.
Yeah. And these tongues of fire then started making people talk in different tongues, but it seems as they were all from different parts of all over the place. Maybe they were already speaking different tongues.
Or really drunk. That could also be the case.
It's a strange story. Yeah. But that's become one of the, let's say, the three main religious holidays that are experienced in Holland, and this is the last of the three in the spring summertime. So we have Easter, we have Hemelvaart, mm-hmm, which is Ascension Thursday, and then we have Pinkster, which is
the Goede Vrijdag.
Yeah, that's
good
Easter.
Good Friday. And then we were working up our way to Christmas again.
Yeah, and then you get no bank holidays until Christmas now. This is the end of it.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no, it's the end of it. You get them all in like a few short weeks.
Yeah.
And then it's like, get back to work, we'll see you at Christmas.
Yeah, you mess up any schedule that your kids might have or created from the start of the year, and then you mess it up so much in 2 months, and then you tell them like, and now you have to be good till summer holiday.
Did you ever do Pink Pop? Did you ever go?
No. I don't think the lineup could ever bother me. And I have to admit, the older I'm getting, the less enthusiastic I'm being in a massive crowd.
Yeah,
with people wearing pink hats.
I've always found I've never been to it, but I have a kind of aversion to really large festivals anyway.
Yeah,
that's kind of some of been fun that I've been to, mm-hmm, but also Pink Pop is usually the, like, since I come here at least, they're usually like one or two acts that I like,
yeah,
and then two or three that I really don't. Just made me like, no, I don't want to be trapped with them for a few hours. But it's an interesting one. It has its own distinct branding, that's for sure, and those awful pink plastic hats.
Yeah, I think it used to be even more like defined, like, okay, Pink Pop is a rock festival and it caters to people who are young people into rock, and older people into rock come together and see their favorite bands.
Yeah.
Mainly the bigger bands.
Yeah.
And they have some smaller bands, but it's usually the focus is on the bigger bands.
Yeah.
And I think now, because there used to be one guy who was sort of the face of the whole festival, he's called Jan Smeets. And he stopped. He's still there because he couldn't leave it behind, but he's not in charge anymore. So now Mojo is in charge, like all the other festivals.
Yeah.
And they made it more. They changed it.
Yeah.
Like I think it's compared. I think you can compare it to how a festival like Glastonbury also changed.
Yeah.
Like it introduced dance. It introduced hip hop. It introduced other things. And I think Pinkpop used to be like rock.
Yeah.
Rock, rock. And now it's more like
a broad mix.
It's different because the people who you need to sell the tickets to also changed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think obviously for mid 90s, Pinkpop was kind of known outside of it, mainly for the antics of Pearl Jam. So it became like that one show Pearl Jam did was kind of broadcast everywhere. I think I even had in a house that I live, we had a giant 6-foot poster of that bit where he's
when he jumps off a thing,
jumping up. Yeah,
yeah.
So like that gig became synonymous with like, oh, that it instantly cool because stuff like that could happen with it.
Yeah, the funny thing is that they would do a very good TV broadcast of the festival.
Yeah.
On national television. Like you can watch one of the bigger acts. You can see a couple of their songs live in really good quality on your TV screen.
Yeah.
So even if you didn't go there, you could get the whole feel of the festival.
Yeah.
And because it was Pinkster, you were free, so you can actually had time to watch it.
Yeah.
So I remember watching it like, let's see how it looks.
Yeah. No, I just wondered if that, because I know obviously that quite a lot of people have gone over the years and some, but it always seemed to have a very young audience when I first came. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of kept that, but it's like each generation, I've passed my Pinkpop time now.
Yeah. But I think it's the festival that you would take your kids in the end.
Yeah.
If your kids are grown up, it could be the festival that you take your kid for the first time to see a festival.
Okay. But we were talking to go away from, we're trying not to talk about music and festivals all the time. It's a habit of ours, we understand. Yeah. But we were riffing briefly on, let's say, the Pentecost theme and Pinkster before we started.
Yeah.
And you had some interesting comments of let's say, the experience of, where do we start? I think
the interesting part is that you moved from England to a smaller town in the Netherlands in a period that I think religion was still a big thing in a village.
Yeah. I still think it is. Mm-hmm. So this is, thank you for rescuing my frazzled mind there. But it seemed a lot more, not so much common, but popular, for want of a better word. with it, like the village I first moved to in Holland, Hillegom. So it was noticeable on a Sunday. So one, nothing was open.
Yeah.
Like it's taken a hell of a long time for Holland to realize that they can actually make some money on a Sunday and start to open things up. And that is like really, it still gets a lot of pushback. Mm-hmm. Even supermarkets and stuff, it was a long time before that opened. So the control of the religious part of it seemed a lot more obvious in Holland.
Yeah.
Moving into that small town. The thing that always makes me laugh is I spent 18 years trying to get out of a small village and said, I'm never going to live in one again. Moved around and then ended up living in a small village again. But so you just can't get away from it. But on a Sunday, it was obvious, like the Sunday best idea that we always say in England seemed to have kind of died out a bit when I was growing up. I mean, I was growing up in a Catholic family, so we did go to church every week. But I lived on Church Street, so which was a Church of England church, but it was like 7 doors away from my house.
Yeah,
and the village would have its service on a Sunday, but it was obvious that it wasn't well attended.
Okay.
So it was, and it was a lot of the older people in the village that would go. Mm-hmm. And there was the Church of England church. There was also a Methodist church that is a couple of doors up from, or next door to Little Andy's house. Mm-hmm. So we would see people going in there. And then there's another kind of church hall that had a Wurlitzer organ in it for reasons I don't understand.
Okay.
And people would go and listen to the organ. So even in that small village, there were like two or three different religious places. Yep. The church at the bottom of our street, the only real interaction I had outside of playing in the graveyard, was we used to go in there on Christmas Day into the little, I want to call it a shed, but it's not that, the little, there's like a little outhouse.
Okay.
And we used to get trestle tables from it. And we would like take two trestle tables up to the house because we would always have a load of people around for Christmas dinner. And we only had a small table. So we had to literally get two trestle tables and put them down the middle of the, of the roof, of the roof, of the living room.
Sorry,
I need another drink. So there were always people were going to church, and then like on UK TV, there's a program called Songs of Praise. You would always see that on a Sunday and it would always drive you mad. I was like, oh God, not this again. I was always aware that there was a, let's say going to church on a Sunday was a thing, but even when I was growing up, it didn't really seem like a very common thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it was like a few families that did it, or you got the sense that it was kind of dwindling.
Yeah.
When I moved to Holland, it was obvious that that was not the case. It was like a very, very common thing for almost everybody to go to church on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Interestingly, over the time, especially in Lissa, when we moved to Lissa, like in the both places that we lived in Lissa, we were on a direct route to a church for hundreds of people. So every Sunday morning, there would be like a procession in Sunday, and it always looks like a funeral because they always wear like dark suits and like dark blazers and white shirts and it's not very colorful, but it's smart. There's a kind of, and I think that might be because it's like the Protestant or even like Lutheran kind of thing. You have to look smart, but you're not showing off. There's a strange.
You don't have
thing to.
Think
to that.
You don't need to draw attention to yourself because it's not about you. It's about the church, probably. Yeah.
And it's interesting. You can see the almost like the types of families they are, because usually like the ones who are really smartly dressed have always got about six or seven kids.
Yeah.
Like they are breeding farms. Like that's what they do. And there's like my sister-in-law's street. There's one house on the my sister-in-law's house is, I think, four bedrooms.
Okay.
Which means pretty much every house on the street is four bedrooms. Maybe even three bedrooms. Might only be three. No, it's four. If you include the Zolder, the attic.
Yeah.
But there's a family on that street and they're on like the second door in. And when they come out, it's literally like a train. There's a whole line of them, and I think you must have them like piled on like in bunk beds or boxes or something, because there's obviously like about 12 to 18 months between every kid, and they're like a load of Russian dolls, but they're just stacked up next to each other. It's like, wow, how they even afford to feed that amount of people, I find quite strange.
But
it was obvious when I came here that it was a lot more of a common on and let's say an established part of your weekend ritual that going to church is a thing that you do.
Yeah.
It was, I wouldn't say there's much of a, you were asking me, is there a big difference? I wouldn't say there's a big difference because that still happens in the UK, but I think the scale of how it happened in, at least compared to those two villages, was quite striking.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because I was thinking about how it was in when I grew up, and I was born and raised in Noordwijk. And Noordwijk is a different town in the Bollestreek because it's a beach town. And they're very like, yeah. They still have the churches there, and it's part of the dynamics of the village, and it used to be a lot more strict because it in the end it is a a fisherman's village, yeah. But it changed so much because they figured out that they could make money out of tourists.
Yes.
And it's very interesting to see if you walk on from the beach from Noordwijk up to the beach of Katwijk, there's a change.
Yeah.
There's less things on the beach itself. And then the boulevard changes.
Yeah.
And on Sunday, everything changes there. It looks like they lock it up, and it's a different kind of town. And the funny thing is that I remember most was on Saturday night, you would go to a bar in Noordwijk, go drinking or whatever, and you will have this group of people from Katwijk who would definitely be there on time for the bus to leave Noordwijk before 12.
Yeah.
Because they need to be back in their own town before 12, because they wouldn't be allowed to be outside for the Sunday.
Yes.
And you see that it also changed the whole village, how the village works and how the people in the village work together. What you describe, like big crowds of people flocking to a church on Sunday, I saw that, but I saw that on Christmas.
Yeah.
You don't see it that much on a Sunday, every Sunday.
Mm.
And it might be... I think it depends on which village you're in. I think for Noordwijk, it was more about, I think the time changed faster there for some reason on that specific topic. Another topic it didn't, but on the religious part, I think it changed faster.
Well, Noordwijk certainly has a different energy to Katwijk, but then most places have a different energy to Katwijk.
Yeah.
But Noordwijk, it's got that seaside party town kind of feel to it. You know, it's fish stalls and it's bars and it's restaurants, and yeah. that's what it's there for. And there's that one corner that's all, let's say, late night bars and stuff. And there's a bit of a kind of lively, hey, come here, have fun type of vibe throughout the whole place. And Katwijk is still that very traditional fishing village.
Yeah, and it's not, I don't think it's, you also have the places like Urk and Den Helder. I think that's even more strict.
Yeah.
But there is a big strictness.
Yeah.
I know a whole bunch of families in Katwijk that probably don't have a television or didn't get a television until a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Because they also claimed it was the eye of the devil.
Yeah. No, the joke when we were here was like, there's only three names in the Katwijk phone book.
Yeah.
And like 90 pages of Van der Plas. it does get a bit of stick in the region for being the, wow, it's a bit, they're a bit strange for Katwijk. And I'm not sure it's entirely deserved, but no. There's definitely a look to the men with it being like the kind of strong fisherman thing. They all have massive arms, like really long arms, yeah. Like arms that just look far longer than they should be. But there's definitely a kind of, oh, yeah, you can almost, we used to have a Katwijk table at Bakka, and all the women that sat on the table had hair that was probably in style in the mid-80s. And this was like late 90s, early 2000s. And it was like, they just stood out as a group. It was like, wow, you're from a different time period to us.
I think what's also very interesting is that lots of people that were born in Katwijk still want to live there.
Yeah.
Or after being away from the town a couple of years, return to it.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people that were born in Noordwijk, they move out.
Yeah.
With no really big plans to return. I think that's also interesting to see the dynamics of a village, because it changes the village, because that means that more people from outside move to a town like that.
Well, it's such a, it gets such an, Nordvik gets such an influx of tourists over the summer. A lot of Germans predominantly and stuff. Like when you're walking around Nordvik in the summer, it's actually quite hard, I would imagine, to find somebody from Nordvik, outside of like Nordvik Binne, like in the village itself, but in the, like along the front, they're in and out people. They don't live there. So I think that the idea of Nordvik probably does not feel like yours in the same way that Katvik might feel like, this is my village, this is my people, this is my thing. I think Nordvik has that thing of like, this is everybody's village, or this is everybody's town. I wonder if that
and
plays
I don't, we don't
a little bit.
Need to make it like more beautiful than it is. It's not the perfect seaside town. It's still a tiny town.
Yeah.
It's not like like a French beach town.
But I also see that with, let's say that because you have such an influx of people from elsewhere, you're constantly reminded that there's something else outside. Where's that come from? It's like, I've talked to people who lived in, like in Glasgow, or even like who lived in like North Shields or like shipbuilding towns and stuff. It's like, they would go to work and they would see like that boat's going to Timbuktu. That one's going to China. That one's going to this. So you're constantly reminded day in, day out that there's a world out there, that like this thing's going to it and I'm staying here. So I've met a lot of people who've grown up in that kind of environment going, I need to go and find out what's out there. And those that are maybe a little bit like, even the village I grew up in, a lot of people are just like, well, you know, I know people who've never left the county.
Oh yeah.
And I literally just don't know. What do I need to go anywhere else for?
Yeah.
It's like,
oh, I know. I also know people like that and it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't blame them. I don't look weird on.
No, you don't judge them for it.
No, I don't judge them for it. But I might be a bit curious why you don't want to experience something else.
Yeah,
but like I said, there's also people that
if
they haven't had their potatoes and meat, they haven't had dinner yet.
Yeah, but I'm fascinated by those that are content with that. Like not those who are like, I'm just not, like those who've just never done it, as opposed to those who have like, no, I have got no, why would I need to? Like that, that just being completely content with that small, I find that quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way, but more in a more curious way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're early. our alarm clock has gone off very early, which is the coffee machine. I think someone's reset it. Have you noticed do you see the, let's say, because Holland, I think the religious influence, obviously, even over the calendar and the work calendar, is still quite strong. But do you see it weakening in the same way that I think it's definitely weakened in the UK? Like that grip from religion and state?
Yeah, I think... I think people see it more as a day off than actually get the meaning behind it.
Yeah.
Or do something with it. It's more like, it's a long weekend off.
Yeah.
Let's plan a trip.
But I see in the UK, like especially in the Northeast when I visit back there, I see a lot of village churches are now houses. So a lot of like the churches are closing. There's it's hard. Let's say my mom is still a practicing Catholic. Mm-hmm. She still goes to church, but the diocese that she's a part of there's like three separate villages that this one priest now covers.
Yeah.
There would be three priests when I was growing up. So like even there aren't enough priests to go around. There aren't enough of a congregation to keep some churches open. I think it really is dramatically reducing in its popularity.
It definitely is. It's very interesting because I was raised in a family, because my dad was raised Catholic, and my mom wasn't raised in any religion, and they So they never forced me to go anywhere. But when I was little, I went to church because I was also fascinated. Like, hey, what is this?
Yeah.
And you're like, ah, okay. And I went to a like a Catholic school. So you're sort of like taught this whole tradition. Yeah, because it feels more like a tradition that you go, you deal with it. And you're like, oh, okay, I can do with this. We get the days off. We go to this building, which looks really fascinating and huge. And there's also weird stuff happening here. Let's see what happened. Yeah. What it is all about. But when I was growing up and I told my parents, like, I don't really want to go there anymore. And they're like, it's up to you.
Yeah.
If you want to go there, fine. If you don't want to go there, it's also fine.
Yeah. I think I was probably even like close to, I think even until I went to uni, I still pretty much had to go to church every week. My mom wouldn't have it any other way.
Ah.
Was like, and even when like it was obvious that I had no interest in it whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
I went just to keep the peace at home because like, but it became a kind of a bit of a laughing stock among my mates. Oh, you got bloody church again. Like, you know, I was like, what you, and also it was like, even those who I went to Catholic school with mm-hmm. would laugh at me because I was still an altar boy when they'd stopped going for there. But it was literally, it was like my mom just wouldn't have it. She still doesn't. She still won't have it. She's still got this idea that I'm going to return like the prodigal son at some point. And I keep joking with her. I go, "Mom, you named me Damien." It was like, and you picked my confirmation name, which was Judas. So like,
something in there.
It's like, you've had a lot of faith in me, mother.
No.
But I was, so I went to a Catholic junior school and a secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as they talked about it, it was basically like religious instruction. Like, this is the way it is. Don't question it. I remember the first time I got, slapped from Sister Frances. And it happened very rarely for me because I was so terrified. I made sure I was a good boy. I think I've spoken about her before. She was quite like the most evil woman I've ever met. But my cousin John, bastard, if you're listening, John, yes, I still owe you one for this. John was a good, I think he's almost like a good 10 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd been through the same school. And I can remember him talking to me. And he was going, have your Sister Frances still come in on a Monday morning and ask you what the gospel was about and everything? I was like, yeah, same. Same thing. He was like, right. He said, and what are you talking about at the minute? And I said, oh, we're doing Genesis, I think. He said, well, just make sure you ask her where, here's a good one for you, Dim. Here's a good question. Why don't you ask Sister Frances where Cain's wife came from? And I was like, what? And he was like, just ask her where Cain's wife came from. And I said, why? He said, well, think about it. He said, so it's like God's created Adam and then he created Eve from him and then they had two sons. So Adam and Eve are the first people on the earth. And they created two sons, Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel grew up. Cain killed him and Cain went off and found a wife. So he's like, where did his wife come from? And I was like, oh, that's a good point. So I made the mistake of asking this question in class. And the board rubber for the blackboard was slammed onto the table and this tall, skinny nun stormed down the class and literally slapped me across the face and went, don't you ask more questions. I was like, oh my God, what was that? Like, what? Wow. So, okay, I'll be very quiet from now on. And then when I told John, of course, he just laughed his head off. I was like, you bastard.
Oh,
but yeah, and I used to be, I very quickly became an altar boy
mm-hmm.
for the one simple thing is that one, I didn't have to sit in the middle of the of the church, but also I'm not joking, I would have something to do, so I'd have a bell to ring or I would have a thing to like move around, but it was like at least I've, I don't care, but at least I've got something to do. And also there was like me and whoever, we could kind of sit around the corner and just have a bit of a giggle or a chat, or put loads of incense into the thing to try and gas the choir out. We used to really enjoy doing that. They used to always come gas them out. But the other thing about being an altar boy, and very quickly became head altar boy, mm-hmm. Was that whenever there was a funeral, I was allowed out of school. So like you would be just sitting there on a like Wednesday morning, and suddenly the priest would be, or Sister Frances would be, Damien, you are needed, like up, drop everything. Doesn't matter what you're working on, get in there, you're doing a funeral. So I was okay. So I must have, like, between the ages of about 10 and 16, I must have attended like 200-300 funerals.
Okay.
So I like, and even secondary school is in a town like close to 10 miles away.
Okay.
So I would get up in the morning, get the bus to school, 6 miles to school, get to school. By the time I got to school, like first lesson, someone will be coming up, Damien, you're needed today. And then I would be taken like the 10 miles up to the church to do the funeral, and then driven back, or given the bus fare home in order to get back to school, which meant that there was at least usually like once a week, sometimes like once every 2 weeks, I would basically get a full day off, because I would be picked up to take off to attend a funeral, to then go back to school, to then go home. So I would just get out of school loads. It was great. And as head altar boy, especially for funerals, very quickly, if you looked like you were upset, mm-hmm. or if you could shed a tear, it was an incredible money-making scheme. Because if you were like shown to be like making everyone do that, loads of people come and go, oh, well done, son, well done. Because there was a really strange thing in like people in the, so the families would turn up, mm-hmm. but you would see the same people at every funeral. So if there's a funeral on, the people that live in that would just come to attend, like come to watch, almost like a spectator sport.
Yeah, yeah.
But like they would see the same people, and they would like always like just come up and just slip like 50p into your hand or something. Oh, well done, Damien. You know, good, well attended today. So okay. like, so you just make a bit of pocket money. Oh, great, that's me crisps and pop for the night. It's like, so I did that for years. But there was one, and so there were essentially there's like two priests living at the, so there was the church, and then at the priest's house was attached to the church.
Yeah.
And the main priest at this point was would live in that. And then there was the convent, mm-hmm. so which is attached to the junior school that I was on,
yeah.
which the nuns would teach at. And in the convent, there was also like, there were like usually like three or four nuns there. And there was also another priest would live there, like a convalet, so like almost a retired priest. Mm-hmm. But it was like, yeah, you like when they put them out to pasture, it's like you don't need to do it every day now, but you can go and live there, and they'll kind of cook you meals and stuff. And anyway, there was this one priest who was living in there. I think he was Father Tony. I think he's Father Tony. Anyway, whatever he's going to call him Tony for this thing. Yep. And he was a really tall, dark head, strong Geordie accent on him, like really, really broad.
Okay.
And he smoked rolling tobacco. So his hands were always like stained, like brown. Yeah. And he always stank of tobacco. But he was really funny. And he was really, and he would always have a laugh with us. And we really liked him. He was, all the priests there were actually quite fun. But this Father Tony, or whatever he's probably not called Tony, but Tony. I really liked him because he would always make me laugh.
Yeah.
And he would always have a laugh and a joke. But he had this really annoying habit of like giving you like sweets, but the sweets would all be covered in bits of tobacco.
Ah.
So he'd like get ready, we'd be like, oh, thanks, Father. And he's like, throw that out of the way. But he was attending this funeral one day. Yep. So the thing was, we would stand outside at the side of the road, wait for the funeral car to come in. Then the family would go into the church, and then we'd lead the coffin in. Mm-hmm. So the funeral attendants would take the coffin out of the car, put it on the shoulders, and then we'd walk along, and there was like a bit of a walkway, and then up two flights of stairs to get into the church.
Yep.
And then I'd be at the front carrying this like tall golden cross. It's like a pole with a cross at the top of it, not just a big cross, but like this golden pole. And then there'd be two young altar boys behind me carrying like big candles. Mm-hmm. So we'd walk down the aisle, and the pews are all there. And then there's three small steps in front of the altar.
Yeah.
I would walk to the top step, turn around, stand the cross down and face out, looking at the whole crowd.
Yeah.
The two young altar boys would get to the second step, turn around and just hold these big candles up. The priest would stand on the third step. Mm-hmm. And then in the middle of the aisle, there was a stand, and the coffin would be placed on that stand at the front. And then the families would be on either side of that. In which case he would do his welcome. Everyone would calm down. There'd be a bit of sniffling and crying. Yep. There's usually like one hymn sung as we were coming in. And then the priest does his introduction. Anyway, this time and time again, same thing. Mm-hmm. And then when it's finished, we would walk it out. And if they were get buried, we would walk up to the graveyard and we would attend while they do the stuff there.
Yeah.
Otherwise we were left to go if they were to the creme or whatever.
Yeah.
So this day I'm standing on the top step. They bring the coffin down. They put the coffin on the stand. The families are all getting there. Everyone's crying. The priest's giving his introduction. And whilst he's talking and saying, oh, welcome, you know, it's a sad day, but blah, 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 this. The stand broke.
Okay.
So the stand, it's like a little metal stand. One of the legs buckled. The coffin fell, bounced on its side. The lid fell off.
Okay.
Right. And let's say the woman kind of popped out a little bit. But anyway, the coffin fell, the lid fell off.
Yeah.
Absolute chaos.
Yeah.
Right. Screams, hollers. I'm stood there in shock, right? But this is the thing, right? Now, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It was also the funniest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Right? So, bang, coffin goes, bang, lid comes off. Wah, wah, wah. The priest goes, fucking hell. I was holding onto that cross for dear life and just trying not to laugh, knowing this is really inappropriate. And I've scrunched my face up and I'm like, but the two young altar boys have turned around and looked at me. They see me and then they tried to giggle. And the priest, Father Tony turns around and goes, Damien, for hell's sake, will you stop laughing? Well, I couldn't do a thing. I was in hysterics.
Wow.
Those people running, they had to, like, the funeral attendants who've walked to the back of the room, they're running down the aisle, they're trying to pick the woman, put the lid back on, just stand. They had to move the stand out of the way and just put the coffin on the floor. Honestly, it was horrendous.
Wow.
But it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It was like it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we finished. There was like, it was, oh, like the family were distraught. Obviously people were in bits. We had to send the two young boys out the back because they were just like laughing their heads off, didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And then I had to kind of try and regain composure and get together. Honestly, it was horrendous. And it finished. And I kind of, we had to go to the, to bury that woman as well. So we'd gone round, we were there for a bit and we walked into the sacristy and Father Tony just slapped me around the back of the head. He goes, well, you made a fucking meal of that, didn't you? And I was like, it's not my fault. We were just laughing. He burst out laughing. He was like, he says, I've attended thousands of these things. I'll never anything like that again.
Wow.
It was just the priest going, fucking hell. And it was like, what? What's going on here? It was hilarious.
Oh.
Bless him. So, funerals.
Oh. Did you ever attend a church in Holland?
No. I've very rarely stepped into a... I really like visiting churches.
Yeah.
As buildings. I love going in. If I go anywhere, like a new city, I love to investigate a church and have a walk around. I think as spaces, as architectural place, and just as places to go and get some rapport and have a few minutes, I really like it. But I've attended less than five, like I count them on one hand, services that I've attended since I went to university. Like I was like, "Mom, it's done now. It's done. I've done my time."
Yeah,
like it's not gonna. My mom's always tried to say, "Oh, can we go to like midnight mass or something?" And I was like, "If I'm going to do anything, I'm not going to do midnight mass." It's like, no. And I still think she's really upset that I didn't baptize my son.
Ah.
And I was just like, no, he can do what he wants, but I'm not putting any of that stuff into him.
Yeah.
And she has mentioned it, she's like, you know, Sammy will go to hell.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But I know she's like, she's really worried about it. I was like, oh, okay, I know she gets a lot of comfort from it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to like... where it and it does like it's part of her social life as well, and also like the people that she does, she gets a lot of comfort from it, and I don't begrudge her on any of that, as much as I personally find it completely bewildering as to
like what we talked before, there's also people who like to live in a village for their whole life, and this is also like something that's a steady thing within. It could be the most steady thing within some people's lives.
Yeah. And
I think, a community around it.
But I think anything that brings you comfort, it's like, what's wrong? Why is that a bad thing?
Yeah.
It's when that strips to like telling other people that they should be, that's the bit, oh, well, hang on a minute. No.
Yeah.
Like behave a bit. But
what I found out to be really a bit scary when I moved from Noordwijk to Leiden, after a month or so living in Leiden, I got this thing in my mail from the nearest church near my new house that they were inviting me to come over.
Mm.
Because
you were new.
Yeah, and you need to register at the new city you live in.
Yeah.
But they also get that get an information or a notice that you moved. So they are able to reach you.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to get that done, you actually need to write a letter to them for telling them to not be doing that again.
Yeah.
Which I find it like, okay.
Yeah, again, it's that link between church and state that I think is quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Because it is, I mean, Holland, the same as England. England's still a very, let's say, in its working calendar, mm-hmm. there's still very much a Christian, it's built around a kind of Christian ethic. Although I think the number of people that would count themselves Christians in the UK is very, very small compared to what it used to be. I think we will continue to see that change over time.
It didn't change a couple of weeks ago when you got this new guy being the head of your country. That was a lot of ceremony.
Yeah.
Involving a church.
Yes. But I keep having lots of people. So my new job was like, oh, I what do you think of King Charles? I was like, I didn't watch a thing of it. I'm just like, oh, okay, he's there, fine.
Yeah.
But I think the pageantry of that thing is maybe quite interesting. Most of the conversations I've seen about people is more talking about what outfits people were wearing as opposed to what the hell the thing was actually about.
Oh yeah.
I find it strange. And on weird kind of religious sides of things. Again, when we used to go on holiday, mm-hmm. like my mum would always have to find a church.
Okay.
So even on a Saturday or a Saturday, I was like, come on, go find a church. I'm like, I'm in California. What the hell do I want to go to? And there was one we went to in I think Anaheim. So not far from LA. Mm-hmm. And we pulled up at the motel, this crappy little motel we were staying in.
Yeah.
And asked the woman, is that like, is there a Catholic church nearby?
Yeah.
Well, the woman was like, I don't know. There's a big church down the road. You can't miss it. There's a giant thing there. It's like, okay, well, we've got it. We turned up and it wasn't a Catholic church at all. Mm-hmm. It was one of those like televangelist places.
Ooh.
Now this thing, I think it was called the Glass Cathedral or something. This thing was massive. It was like a skyscraper.
Yeah.
Thousands of people.
Yeah.
Turned in. They had a woman from Wales over to sing. It was like a full event. Mm-hmm. 3.5 hours. I mean, she made my dad attend as well. God, he was like a poor guy. But it was, it was horrendous.
Yeah.
And it was like that proper, like, stand up and you're like fire and brimstone stuff.
Yeah, for hours. Yeah.
And when we finished, right, and we walked out, my mum said, well, that was nice, but we're going to have to find a Catholic church now. I was like, no, we're, no. She was distraught.
Oh.
But the best, televangelist we ever saw, we caught a clip of him on TV in, I think we were in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And he came out with a line that was when I was traveling with my mate, Andy. And this guy came out with a line that sent both of us into hysterics. So he's giving it like the full screaming at the camera and going mad. And it was like, the crowd's all whipped up and in a frenzy. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah. And yeah, you know, the feet that don't stink are charged with the electric power of love.
Wow.
We were like, what's going on here? I still don't understand what that related to or anything, but it was that little snippet that we caught, like, walk by. I was like, wow, that's something else. Feet that don't stink are charged with the electric power of love. Sounds like a Zappa lyric.
Could definitely be a song. pretty okay song. There's no religious part in it anywhere.
Yeah.
Oh. Did you ever have the pleasure of having a group or a family at your door?
Well, we get that in Holland. You get that a lot. Like in Lisse, usually once or twice a month, there'll be some people around. Like, hello, we'd like to talk to you about the Bible. Wrong house. Bye. Yes. And in the UK, there's like the Jehovah's Witnesses are still very common.
They have a clubhouse two streets away from here.
I've not been one to entertain them.
Oh, you didn't invite them in?
No.
Oh.
No. We used to when we were younger, just to be annoying. Mm-hmm. But they would click very quickly. It's like, no, this isn't working.
This isn't.
I had an old colleague actually who was stunning. She looked like Alicia Keys.
Okay.
Like stunningly beautiful girl. Proper party animal. Like her talks from the weekend would be of like, how was your weekend? We were like, oh, went to play golf or went for a few beers. And she was like, oh, I was squirting champagne into guys' mouths from a bar in like through water pistols and stuff. Like, what? I went to this, we were out with this guy and it wasn't going that well. So he said, shall we go to a swingers party? It was ours. It was like her lifestyle was like proper rock and roll debauchery without ever being in a band or anything like that. She was proper party animal. And then she moved to America with work because, mm-hmm. and she was going to go to New York. But anyway, she moved to Florida to be near her brother.
Yeah.
And then within 6 months it was like, she was a Jehovah's Witness.
Okay.
And complete change around of character, like absolute complete flip around. Don't raise your hand to me to shake your hand. I don't shake hands anymore. Don't do that. And for the girl who would go out and walked into someone else's hotel room drunk, cause she was on the wrong floor, mm-hmm. And would like the, from this proper party animal to dressing really formal, really this, and then talking like I literally witnessed her in the space of like 6 months just completely change her entire character.
Wow.
I was like, what? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
I was like, she started off buying a dog, then she got violin lessons. I was like, are you a bit lonely? And then, oh yeah, now I'm a Jehovah's Witness. I was like, wow, what's going on here? But that was actually quite scary to see. Like,
yeah.
But not scary in the but it was how scared she was,
yeah,
of what was to come. Like, she was convinced it was the end of the world, and
yeah.
But her attitude was like, wow, I hope. And then, like, she left us and she actually moved back to Holland, actually. And as I understand, she's doing quite well for herself. Mm-hmm. And I wish her well. But, like, wow, it was that. It was complete 180 change of character, like, almost overnight.
Wow.
It was like, how do you end up there?
Yeah.
Like, how does that? I still don't understand how that happened. Strange.
Yeah.
But, yeah, weird.
It's weird to see it does happen.
Mm.
And it's weird to see that, yeah. Like I said, I don't think it's a bad thing to cling to a religion or whatever, or how do you call it? But I'm not sure if that would be the best thing to.
Yeah, what the you most choose stable to thing apply in your life to?
Yeah,
it's interesting. But and then yeah. that kind of leads us onto a dear of a friend who likes his theological studies.
you mean our friend Jaco?
Yes.
Yeah. I think he's, if I'm not mistaken, he is the son of a domine.
Mm.
But I'm not sure how religious he is himself.
No, but that's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Because it.
I think he likes he likes the idea more than he likes the practice.
I think he's interested in the. Well, I don't know. I'm projecting this onto him, mm-hmm. but I imagine he's more interested in, let's say, the mechanics of it as opposed to like holding that as something true and trusted. Like, I'm interested in it from almost like a mythology point of view and mm-hmm. a storytelling point of view, and like how the certain stuff. I still think there's a lot of good elements from that kind of Catholic teaching that I had of like how to conduct yourself, or how to live right, or how to treat people. There's a lot of it's completely batshit insane.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, okay. But there's certainly elements in that I think is like, well, you know, you should be good to each other. You should be,
you should treat each other. Respect each other.
That kind of stuff I think is kind. But I'm also fascinated in, particularly from reading a lot of like Joseph Campbell's stuff, of how those same creation stories and figures kind of repeat across the world in different. Like they've all got a variation of the same themes,
mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that those stories kind of repeat with different characters, with different, but they all kind of play a similar thing. I'm fascinated from that point of view.
Yeah,
but I'm certainly not one who thinks that some book that was written 2,000 years ago is the thing that you should hold closest and dearest. But
no, and you don't feel the urge to be in a big building on a Sunday morning,
unless there's a band on.
Yes,
we all have our religions in one way or another.
Oh, definitely. Well, yeah, it's sort of a religion as well,
or spiritual attachments.
I've been to a really interesting show in a squatted church in the Hague, which was really cool. It was crazy improv electronics, and having it in a church made it really special.
Yeah.
Also because of the acoustics, probably, but
yeah. Yeah. I've seen a lot of gigs in churches, and especially at Halden, there's like, mm-hmm. like when they started doing stuff that you would get, but a lot of gigs in churches kind of fall into a pattern.
Yeah.
And they're like, they're quite reverent, and they're usually quite low key.
Mm-hmm.
And they use the environment well, but you can see some great gigs there, but most of them kind of fall into a, it's in that nice gentle flow. The ones that are really just like, we're going to break the break the walls off this place.
That's
there, like some of that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That you can. There's been some fun experiences in there. But also, I think that love of music, mm-hmm. that love of performance and stuff. I think a lot of that does come from my earliest exposure is of being in church, of hearing a choir of people, of hearing that, like the power of that, of those. As much as most of those songs were putrid and awful, there's still a few that are like, oh, that's a banger, you know, like, yeah. That's got a bit of something to it.
Yeah.
But that idea of, like, before I ever saw a play, before I ever kind of watched it, like before I ever saw a band play live, mm-hmm. you know, my live music was in church.
Yeah.
Was that, and I think that kind of, that love of music and of performance is probably instilled from back there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's fun. It's just now I want more of the music and less of the preaching.